Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
New Scientist articles from the 11th of August 2018. This article is by, this is the second episode, Michael Marshall. This is part of my cardiac rehab, just learning to read. I'm very pleased that I'm improving so far. This article is by Michael Marshall. Don't hibernate if you want a big brain. Mammals that hibernate for part of the year tend to have smaller brains than those who can feed all year round. The finding may help explain why big brain primates like us mostly evolved near the equator, where the seasons are much weaker and there's less reason to hibernate. Sandra Hellstab at the University of Zurich, Switzerland, and her colleagues compiled a data of 1,104 mammalian species. We looked at the size of each species brain relative to its body and whether or not the mammal hibernated. Those mammals that did had significantly smaller brains relative to their bodies, even when the team controlled for other factors like the animal's diet. Quote, hibernation really is a constraint on brain size, says Hellstab. The team argues that this is because it takes a lot of energy to grow and run a large brain, an idea called the expensive brain hypothesis. Seasonality of food availability, a reason for hibernation, would prevent animals from having a constant high energy supply needed to grow such a brain. Primates, a group that include monkeys, apes, and humans, mostly live in places near the equator. The lack of seasons there, which means no need to hibernate. This will probably be one of the reasons why so many primates have evolved large brains, says Hellstab. Even today, only a handful of primates hibernate. Quote, there's just three orders of lemur which hibernate, and these have a smallest brain in primates, she says, says Hellstab. However, one species have evolved a big brain. The additional intelligence it gains may then allow it to colonize more seasonal places. In line with this, there is evidence that successful invasive species tend to have larger brains. Well, yep, I don't know where they said it. This is an article by Leah Crane. Listen up, the sound waves have a negative mass. Heavy music isn't heavy after all. It actually is the opposite. Sound waves have a mass and can interact via gravity, but that mass is negative. In other words, sounds float upwards. Angelo Espino, Columbia University in New York, and his colleagues calculated the relationship between sound and gravity, taking into account complicated particle interactions that previously had been ignored. They found although the effect is small, sound waves should have negative gravitational mass. Quote, it's almost like anti-gravity, says Rothstein at Carnegie Mellon University in Pennsylvania. Quote, the atoms are moved in the wave are still being pulled down by Earth, but the sound wave itself is being repelled. This means that sound wave moves in a path that will bend upwards away from the pull of gravity. Quote, heavy metal music, given long enough time, is probably going to start floating in the air, so it's probably not that heavy, says Ricardo Penica of the University of Pennsylvania. Of course, the same is true no matter what the genre of music. In some senses, this is a trick of mathematics because a sound wave is simply an excitation of a medium and not a particle with a true mass. But the sound reality is being affected by, really is being affected by gravity. Quote, if you were to weigh a sound wave using scale, it wouldn't be a mass in that sense, says Walter Goldberg at Yale University, but it's a mass in the sense of that this thing gravitates. The sound wave's negative mass is not absolute, but rather relative to the density of the medium. This means that the negative mass can't exist in a vacuum, where sound has no medium to travel in, which is a fortunate thing because it would break a number of laws of physics. Quote, a negative potential in a vacuum would be rather insane since it would require truly negative masses, says Espitillo. Performing an experiment to measure the predicted effect will be difficult because observing it requires extremely strong gravitational field or an extremely dense medium for which the sound wave has to travel. It could be done using clouds of molecules cooled to near absolute zero, or an extremely strong sound wave like that created by a particularly powerful earthquake, said the speedome. It could also be seen in exotic... Performing an experiment to measure the predicted effect will be difficult because observing it requires extremely strong gravitational fields. It could also use exotic materials like superfluid helium, which has zero viscosity when chilled to near absolute zero. A sound wave travelling through this weird liquid in normal gravity would have a negative mass equivalent to a positive mass of a single helium atom. After travelling 100 metres, it would have floated upwards by 1 metre. There are other strange consequences of sound having negative mass. Just as two objects with positive masses will attract one another, two waves with negative masses will do the same. So if two people were screaming while facing the same direction, given enough time, the two screams would bend towards one another and merge, says Esparta. Quote, but they would have to be screaming with their large energies or in an extremely dense area like the center of a neutron star, he says. Don't try it at home. Field Notes from the Celtic Sea, Science and Technology, and this is by Joshua Howe Greco. Robots hunt for oil spills underwater. A small dinghy bobs on the ocean a few miles off the Irish coast. Two men in dark clothes lower a pipe into the water, switch on a pump, and the chemicals start to flow. To the untrained eye, it looks distinctly dodgy, but these men are from the Irish Navy, and the chemicals are dumping are creating a simulated oil spill to be sniffed out by a team of robots lurking in the depths below. I'm aboard the Le Rosini, an Irish naval surface patrol ship, with a team of scientists who think they have a uniquely effective way of dealing with oil spills. The project leader is Javier Galbert of the Technical University of Catalonia, Spain. Inspiration came to him following a huge deep horizon water spill in 2010. Excellent drove how strangely oil can behave in water. Much of it didn't rise straight from the ruptured well to the surface, but remained trapped in a water column where it was spread out, then, quote, popped up in unexpected places, says Galbert. Emergency responders can use satellites to spot the rough location of oil on the surface, then track closely using radar on planes and or from iron boats. This helps them decide on the tactics, whether to use float booms to hem in the oil and vacuum it up, or add chemicals called dispersants to help dissolve the oil. But we have no good way of tracking oil underwater, and it's tough to make those calls without knowing if there's a lot of oil sloshing around out of sight. Gilbert's idea was to deploy a team of autonomous underwater vehicles, UAVs, with instruments that can detect oil fluorescence when you shine light on it. They can provide responders with a evolving 3D map of the plume. To simulate the spill, the naval officers in dinghy are releasing a dye called rhodohedron. I use that for lasers, which is chemical bonds to the fluorescence and fluoresces more to oil. Five AUVs then begin to crisscross the patch of dye. The difficult part is getting communications to work with so the AUVs know the positions and so can relay the information back. Radio signals don't travel well underwater, but sound does. The team sent signals via Wi-Fi to a floating stations, which then relayed the UAVs using acoustic signals. Soon things were working, and the researchers laptops on plastic tables have a 3D model of the spill. This isn't the first exercise of its kind. Galbert and his team also tested things out in the Mediterranean in 2015-2017, but there they worked from a special ship that could use its thrusters to remain still in the water. This time things were more challenging and realistic. The Navy ship is built primarily for speed, not stability, and the rocking of the antennas meant the team twice lost contact with the AUVs, some of which are worth more than £100,000 because of the sophisticated sensors on board. On the second day, the tests had to be called off. The black waters of the Atlantic were so rough that the AUVs couldn't easily have smashed could easily have smashed against the ship while being retrieved using mechanical winches. There are ways of fixing those problems. You might use static balloons as communication base station, for example, says Gilbert, and get around the problems of retrieving UAVs. You could program them to head to shore on their own. Quote, we have learned many things and we are close to making it a reality, end quote, Gilbert told the team before below decks at wrap-up meeting. Plenty of people are interested in the project, which is known as Enhanced Underwater Robotics Ready for Oil Spills. You ready for oils? Okay. Including professional response firms funded by the oil industry to help clean up big spills. Then again, you can only learn so much without working in real oil, which is why just occasionally training exercises like these release the real stuff into the ocean. Industry-funded Cooperative Oil Spill Response Limited is planning one such exercise the next few years. It may sound like a terrible idea, but when the next big spill happens, we'll need to be ready for it. Emoji glasses give autism a boost by Poppy Jane Morgan. Many children diagnosed with autism find it hard to decipher other people's facial expressions. An interactive system that uses Google glasses may help them out. Quote, I can see the differences this will have in people's lives in a significant immediate and meaningful way, says Don G. Kalbine, whose son took part in the study. She said enrolling on it was, quote, one of the best choices, or enrolling for it, I suppose, choices I've ever made. Using technologies such as Google Glass to support individuals with autism has been a promising area of research. The aim is to provide a game-like environment to practice life skills without being overwhelming, but the idea has never been used outside the lab before. Dennis Wall at Stanford University and his colleagues have shown that effects work outside the lab. They gave 14 children with autism a system called superpower glasses to try at home for 10 weeks on average. The system comprises a Google Glass headset and an Android app. It detects expression of real time, which displays the magic emojis on the corner of the glasses, as well as describing the emotion via headphones. The idea is that children find it easy to spot emotion when they are displayed this way. Oh dear. To find out if the setup had any effect, the team asked parents to assess the children before, during, and after wearing the glasses. They did this using a social responsiveness scale, which is commonly used for autism resource. The children's scores on this questionnaire fell on average by an average of 7.38 per study, indicating a drop in the number of autistic traits. None of the participants' scores rose. Six of the 14 participants had large enough declines in their scores to move them down one step in rating of their classification of autism. The results should be interpreted with caution since the study lacked a control group, says Wall. I agree 100%. But the findings are promising. The team, well, it's almost unethical to do it. Okay. This team is now completing a larger randomized study on the trial. Columbine and her son Alex have previously used regular sessions of applied behavioral therapy with therapists over many years, but Alex's gaze avoidance remained a significant issue for him. This was associated with anxiety, especially with other children who can be unpredictable. Columbine noticed a difference in Alex's eye contact pattern within just 2 weeks of using the superpower glasses. Quote, previously it would be two or three times a day, she says. Then I noticed that I wasn't counting the times he looked at me anymore. She says the increase still holds true almost 2 years after the trial. Again, this is just blurb. Access to the early interventions is crucial, says Deborah Ribley at the Durham University, UK. Quote, I would hope to see this intervention compared to other types of social skills and emotional recognition training packages so we can see whether the benefits are specific to this intervention, she says. Modify Mozzie's Wipeout Dinghy by Alice Klein. Dinghy virus has effectively been expunged from an Australian city following the release of an anti-dengue mosquito in 2014. Townsville in Queensland has recorded zero cases of locally transmitted dengue for 4 years since the modified mosquitoes were released, compared with 54 cases in the previous 4 years. The trial represents the first successful use of modified mosquitoes to eliminate a mosquito-borne virus across the city. Scott O'Neill of Monash University in Australia and his colleagues infected Aedes aegypti mosquitoes with naturally occurring Wollombidcha bacteria, which hampered the mosquitoes from transmitting the dengue virus. They released 4 million of the infected mosquitoes across townfuls over a 2-year period. Once released, the infected mosquitoes bred with wild mosquitoes and passed on the Wachibia bacteria to offspring so that they became worse at transmitting dengue too, says O'Neill. The Wollombidcha bacteria poses no risk to humans, animals and their environment. Of the total 11 countries, including Indonesia, Brazil, Vietnam, are now trailing the Wachibia infected mosquitoes. These nations have higher rates of dengue than Australia, meaning the modified mosquitoes may work less well. However, O'Neill says the preliminary results look positive. Although the exact mechanism is still being unraveled, research suggests that Wollombidcha prevents the drug prevents dengue transmission in two ways. It makes the mosquito immune system more resistant to the virus, and it makes it harder for the virus to extract nutrients from the mosquito cells. Lab studies suggested that the Wollombidcha also blocks mosquito transmission of Zika and the Chikungunya virus, but field studies are needed to confirm this. News technology by Jake Bueller. Small dogs like to aim high. Call it small dog syndrome. When small dogs urinate on objects on their walks, they seem to be using this opportunity to deceive by aiming high to give the impression that their mark is left by bigger animals. Indeed, pandas pee upside down. When male dogs spray urine, they are scent marking, laying down an odor-based message to other dogs to communicate health, sex, and age. In this way, scent marking is considered an honest signal, relaying accurate information to potential competitors and mates. But when Betty McGuire at Cornell University in New York looked at how the body size influenced scent marking, she and her team noticed a curious pattern. Small dogs urinated more frequently than large dogs, and they were more likely to urinate towards vertical targets. Small males seem to make extra effort to raise their leg high. Some small males would almost topple over, says McGuire, quote. So we wonder whether small males try to exaggerate their body size by leaving high urination marks. Her team filmed the adult male dogs urinating on short walks to calculate the angle of their legs when crazed, which was compared to the dog's height and mass. The team also measured the height and the urine marks and chosen targets. General physiology. Unsurprisingly, when the dog raised their legs at a greater angle, the urine left higher traces than nearby surfaces. The team found that small dogs angled their legs proportionally higher when urinating than bigger dogs, thereby marking higher than expected for their size. The point is probably to deceive competing males, says the team. Quote, direct social interaction with other dogs may be particularly risky for small dogs, says McGuire. Because they can't measure up physically in a one-to-one competition with the bigger dogs. The risk may be why small dogs seem to prefer scent marking, doing so more often than large dogs. It allows them to establish a presence without interacting with competitors. The science of animal urination is a fast-moving field. In 2014, the Ig Nobel Prize was awarded to researchers who discovered that mammals seem to prefer to urinate aligned north-south with a magnetic field. And in 2015, one was awarded for the discovery of the universal law of urination, the fact that all mammals that weigh more than 3 kilograms take about 21 seconds to empty their bladder. Lab-made lungs allow pigs to breathe easily, an article by Chelsea White. In a bioengineering breakthrough, lungs made in the lab have been implanted into pigs for the first time, enabling them to breathe normally. I would argue this is the first time that tissue-engineered organs have been implanted in a large animal and have shown to survive any degree of function whatsoever, says Laura Nicholson of Yale University, who was involved in the work. To make the lungs, Jonah Nichols and the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston and her colleagues used growth hormones to encourage pig lung cells to grow into tissue, populating the protein skeleton of pig's lungs with all its cells removed. The repopulated lungs were kept in a sealed chamber up to 30 days where they grew new blood vessels. Four of the organs were implanted into young pigs, which had each had a lung removed. Oh, rats run. The animals didn't need a drug to suppress the immune system since the lungs were grown from their own cells, and their bodies gave no sign of rejecting the organs. By 2 weeks after surgery, Nicholas' team detected blood circulation in the engineered lungs and measured similar tissue densities in the natural lungs. Their measurement showed that lungs also had normal pressures and volumes, although one pig developed a partial airway block to reduce lung expansion. Gene expression was also similar between the artificial and natural lungs. As the animals grew, the number of cells in the bioengineered lungs increased as they spread to fill in any gaps created by the lung tissue, letting them seem to fully support the blood flow. Nicholas's team chose to do the test with pigs because the animals grow quickly and could reveal whether the lung could grow in the body. Although the team implanted the lungs, which became supported by the pig's blood vessels and enabled the animal to breathe, they didn't connect the organs to the pulmonary artery. This blood takes the non-oxygenated blood from the heart to the lungs, where it's diffused with oxygen and then carried around the body. Until bioengineered lungs have been hooked up to the pulmonary artery, we can't know if they work well. Nicholas wants to test the ability of the bioengineered lungs to oxygenate blood from the pulmonary artery. If successful, the hope is that we can one day grow new human lungs from our own cells.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.